Good morning. Oh, we do, man. It's been said often, but we miss the young adults. They're having a great time this weekend. It was 0.5 degrees, according to my car, in Oakey this morning. Are the guys at Binger? It's probably colder out there. So hope you're staying warm. We know you're online this morning. Miss you guys. See you next week. All right, how good to be gathered together. We moved this week, and I wasn't supposed to be preaching, so we'll see how this goes. I'm trying to tee up a mate to come and preach a really cracking message that he's got on King Josiah and some really great stuff around that I think it looks like will happen a little bit later in July. So we're gonna go for a bit of a ride this morning. We're actually doing this out of order. We're spending the whole quarter in this preaching focus called Ancient Past, Timeless Truths, looking at these figures of faith from the Old Testament. And we're supposed to be doing 2 weeks on Moses. And Ellie, one of our ministry interns, was going to be looking at Moses' kind of earlier stages of his life and his original calling. And then I was going to preach after her and look at some of Moses' later life. But just with the way things have worked out, we're now doing it in reverse order. And so Ellie will be preaching next week, I believe it is, and kind of doing part two of Moses. So we'll do it out of order. So we'll just roll with it this morning. But if you're following along, we're going to be in Exodus chapter 3 this morning and Exodus chapter 33. But we'll get to those a little bit later as we continue on. As we looked at last week, this ancient past timeless truths, there are so many figures of faith across the Old Testament that there's so much that we can learn from as we seek to faithfully follow Jesus in the context of our lives today. I think it's really worth taking the time over this quarter to just look at these figures of faith, how they followed God's leading, how they stayed faithful to serving him in the midst of their cultural moment and context. And so we're going to do the same and see what we can learn from their lives. And I want to put to us, as we start to lean in this morning and as we look at the life of Moses, I think we live in a world in this time. It's the age of information. I remember seeing a statistic a little while ago that I'm going to absolutely butcher, but hopefully it comes across, that there is on a daily basis more digital information being created daily than there was in over a decade at one point. Just with the sheer volume of information, creation, innovation, entrepreneurship, everything that's happening in the moment that we live in. We're overflowing with advice. We're overflowing with opportunities for guidance and options on how to make decisions, on how to find peace and contentment in life, how to move forward, how to better ourselves, so on and so forth. When we don't know what to do, we can just Google it, maybe a little bit of YouTube University. If we need clarity about our future or wisdom on something, there's probably a podcast for it. If we're feeling overwhelmed, there's an algorithm that's gearing up to serve us mindless relief in the form of 5-second, 15-second videos. If we want to feel better about ourselves, there's always a new mindset hack, a 3-step journaling method, or some new personality test that seems to be popping up left, right, and center. Ultimately, I think there's no shortage of ways that is put before us on how to figure life out. There's no shortage of places to turn. And this morning isn't about demonizing the resources available to us. If we're honest, there's wisdom in these things. These things can be helpful, and I think we definitely find God in the midst of them. I know from experience, across this room, from personal experience, God uses all kinds of things to help us make informed decisions. Whether it's wise friends, good leadership, podcasts, books, doctors, good systems, good planning, he's in the midst of all of these things. And I don't think that we need to apologize for the fact that we live in 2025 and all of these things are available to us. But as we seek to faithfully follow Jesus in the midst of all of this information and all of these resources, I think there's something that we need to guard against. We can have access to all of the resources in the world and I think still miss the one thing that we need the most and the one thing that matters the most, the presence of God. Because while it's possible to move forward with insight, I think it's something else entirely to move forward with God. And without realizing it, I think we can become so focused on what helps us move forward that we can forget to ask who we're moving forward with and actually ultimately what we're moving towards. And I think if we're honest at a deeper level, again, I don't think this just happens out there in the context of culture. Even in the church, we can find ourselves leaning more on leadership principles, past experience, or even spiritual success stories than on the actual presence of God. We can quote the right voices, we can follow the right models, we can adopt the right strategies, but if we're not careful, I think we can end up placing our trust in systems to do what only surrender and dependence can do. And I think this is what sets Moses apart, at least hopefully that's what comes across this morning, is that Moses seems to hold to something that we often forget. His focus was on more than information. His focus was more than vision and direction. His focus was on the reality that he had access to God himself. He didn't seek God for a map that painted a picture of an ideal future. He wasn't chasing another miracle. He wasn't seeking God only to find out what was next. He wanted God and God alone. And more than that, he refused to move and go unless God went with him. Even after miracles, after the burning bush, after the moment standing in front of the Red Sea, even after the cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night, we find this moment in Exodus 33 where Moses stands in the tension of leadership and disappointment, of promise and of pressure, and he says something, I think, incredibly bold to God. If your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. Maybe it could be explained like this in different words. I don't want the promised land without you, God. I don't want progress or promises without your presence. And I don't want the plan if you're not in it. This is a deeply countercultural cry, not just, I think, for us today, but even in the midst of the moment that Moses finds himself in. Within the people of God at the time, even this was a rare heart posture. As Moses is up on the mountain and meeting with God and engaging with his presence personally, the people are down at the bottom of the mountain building idols, willing to worship whatever was shiny and convenient in the moment, swaying from belief and faithfulness like it was a trending TikTok dance. But in Moses, I think we see that he wasn't content with spiritual substitutes, with shiny idols and golden calves. He wasn't chasing outcomes or comfort or ease as his first priority. He was chasing intimacy with God. He had a value for the presence of God that ultimately shaped everything about his life. That's why we're looking at Moses today. I think in a world that teaches us to optimize as much as we possibly can, to place our trust in bank accounts, in degrees, in knowledge, in our politicians, and even in our own abilities, Moses reminds us that the greatest pursuit of our lives is still the presence of God. This is the ancient path, and this is the timeless truth. We don't just need direction. We don't just need more information. We need God himself. And so as we lean in this morning, here's a question for us. Are we building our lives, maybe ministries that we serve in? Are we building our families and our futures that run and can run on insight alone? Or are we building futures that are fully dependent on the presence of God? Because while the world has a lot to offer, there is only one thing that can truly sustain. And I think Moses shows us what it looks like to say presence over everything. And every time I reflect on the life of Moses, this stirs me. Even after all that he'd seen, the moment with God of the burning bush, the parting of the Red Sea, fresh manna from heaven in the wilderness, water coming from a rock, fire on Mount Sinai, and the tangible, manifest presence of God, he still cries out, "Show me your glory." He had seen more than we could possibly imagine. Miracles that I think would ultimately rattle most of us if we actually experienced them ourselves. It would shake us to our core and change our lives forever. And yet, his deepest desire wasn't satisfied with what had been. He longed for more. Not more from God, just more of God. Show me your glory. What a cry. What a prayer. What a posture that I think Moses models for us. Perhaps, maybe in the context of all of the information and resources available to us, maybe we settle too easily in our own faith. Maybe we let our previous experiences of God become the ceiling for our future ones. But I think Moses reminds us that no matter how long we've been walking with God, no matter how many miracles we've seen or moments, encounter, or experience we've had, there is always more. And that more isn't about hype or emotion or striving. This is about deeper intimacy. It's about greater nearness to God, and it's about more of God's presence. And I think there's an invitation for us this morning, not just to learn from Moses, not just to reflect on his life, but actually to almost figuratively lean in with him. To go from Moses' cry of God, show me your glory, to a heart cry for us as a community to say, God, show us your glory. Would you pray with me? God, thank you. Thank you that you are in our midst this morning. Thank you for these figures of faith that you've given us in your word that we can reflect on, we can learn from. God, in the midst of all of their imperfections, we draw hope that in your mercy and in your grace and in your kindness, you still use them. God, you still blessed what they put their hand to as they seek to faithfully serve you. And God, that's our heart cry. That with our imperfections and with all of the things that we bring to the table and all the things that we don't, God, our hearts cry. It's that you'd show us your glory. That you'd show us your glory. So God, show us your glory this morning. And as we open your word and as we read it, as we engage with it, God, I pray that it would read us, that it would engage with us in our lives. And God, ultimately, you'd shape us and form us this morning into a people postured, hungry, desirous for you and for your presence. Lead us as we continue to gather this morning. Bless our time and be glorified in our midst. Amen. It's going to be a little bit shorter this morning. There's, I suppose, in a sense, I'm probably running off the back of last week. And so if you weren't here, I apologize for a little bit of lack of context. But I'm going to continue on with this language of posture. And just, I suppose, the reality of two postures that I think can be seen in Moses' life. The first one, a posture of dependence, where he says, we won't go without you. And I think this is a quiet but stunning moment in Moses' life. Israel's just committed one of the most devastating acts in its early history. While Moses is up on the mountain with God, the people grew impatient, waiting for their next steps, waiting for the next round of vision, so to speak. They melt down their jewelry and they make a golden calf, declaring that this was the God who brought them out of Egypt. Ultimately, I think this is a complete failure of trust and worship. Moses is devastated, God is angry, and into this moment, God says something shocking to his chosen people. I'll still give you the land I promised, but I won't go with you. Maybe in other words, it could be that you can have the outcome and you can have the promise, but you're going to have it without me. And I think we have to contend with the reality here that this is a deal that I think a lot of people would take. The promise is still intact. The destination is still ahead and it's a good one. This is the land of milk and honey. This is what the people of God have been crying out for. And to take it another step, even the danger of getting there is reduced. God still says that he'll send an angel to be with them and lead them. And ultimately, I think if we're honest, this is probably not a bad day at the office, unless you're Moses. We read in Exodus, Moses says this to God, if your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth? If dependence sounded like something, I think this captures it. There's no undertones here, I feel like, of obligation or of self-seeking or self-preservation in Moses' dialogue with God here. There's just a deep awareness that if God isn't with them, it's not worth doing. And the promises of God without the presence of God simply don't seem attractive to Moses. Maybe in other words, he's saying, we're not interested in promises without presence. We're not taking one step if you're not in it and you're not with us. This is ultimately, I think, dependence on a biblical scale. It's one thing for us to say, God, I need you, a prayer that I'm sure we've all prayed multiple times over. But I think it's a whole other thing to live like there is nothing worth doing without God. And I think what makes this moment even more powerful is that it's not just countercultural in the context of the world around Moses, It was countercultural even in the camp below him. The people were more than happy with this golden calf. They were willing to exchange the God who parted the Red Sea for a statue made from earrings. And Moses stands in contrast to everyone around him. Where they were chasing convenience, he's up on the mountain chasing communion with God. Where their priority was results and next steps, his priority seems to be relationship with God. And where their priority was ultimately themselves and their own comfort, Moses' priority was God's presence and God's leading. Now, what of us as we seek to faithfully follow Jesus? Are there plans that we're making? Maybe there's dreams that we're chasing, or that there's doors we're trying to walk through without stopping to ask God, are you in this? Maybe without first posturing ourselves in his presence first. Because we've reflected on it, we live in a culture of strategy, of vision boards, of next steps, of five-year plans, of optimizing everything we possibly can. And again, not all of these things are inherently bad. But I think without the presence of God, they're ultimately just noise. And if I can just put perhaps a pastoral and hopefully soul-searching question before all of us this morning. Are there golden calves that we're creating and worshiping in our own lives? The people of Israel built a golden calf, not because they ultimately stopped believing in God entirely, but because they got tired of waiting. They wanted something visible, something tangible, something immediate, something that they could control, something that maybe perhaps felt spiritual but didn't require further surrender on their part. And let's be honest, don't we do the same? We can turn our comfort into an idol and it becomes our primary pursuit. We can elevate our career over our calling, and compromise becomes the bridge. We can obsess over influence and chasing affirmation. We can rely on our gifting instead of on the gift giver. And we can spiritualize our busyness while neglecting God's presence. We have to contend with the fact that golden calves still exist. They just look shinier, they promise more productivity, and they've become more socially acceptable. And when we turn to those things, even unintentionally, I think we begin to replace the presence of God in our lives with something far less powerful, far less satisfying, and far less important. But Moses' posture of dependence here, I think, reminds us of something radical. The promise was never the point. God's presence is. And we see in this moment, God says, I'll give you the land. And Moses says, if you're not going, I don't want it. And I think if we unpack what Moses says next, maybe it gives us a little bit of clarity on why. He continues on and says to God, what else will distinguish us from all the other people on the face of the earth? Moses understood that the only thing that made Israel different, it wasn't their language, it wasn't their customs, it wasn't their history, it wasn't even their covenant. This isn't a personal prayer in Exodus 33. I think this is a declaration that Moses makes on behalf of the entire people of God. What else will distinguish me and your people? He's not asking for power. He's not asking for favor. It's not about strategy or clarity or resources. He's saying the thing that sets us apart, the thing that makes us us, is your presence with us. And if we bring that a little bit closer to home, as individuals, as a local church community, what if that is what defined us? A deep and growing value for God's presence, a genuine and surrendered openness to his leading, a priority on creating space for him to speak and move and dwell however he pleases, and a hunger not just to know about God and know more about God, but to actually be with God. That's what Moses was crying out for, I think, in this moment. And I think it's what God is still inviting us into. God, if you're not going, I don't want to go. And if I can personalize this, maybe just for a moment. The only thing that came to mind this week, I think, in reflecting on this was that it was a particular season of ministry that we experienced and lived through as a family. It was an extended one, honestly, of immense pain and hurt. In the midst of a really tough time, there's details that I can't share and stuff that I just wouldn't share to respect and honor particular individuals. But to try and frame it, This was a season and a time where I think really, in reality, we experienced the worst of the local church, of politics and of abuse and manipulation and a whole host of other things. There was a complete lack of righteousness and a complete lack of holiness in a number of different areas and in an environment that we were in. And things were being swept under the rug. There was lying. There was deceit. There was a whole host of stuff going on. And it was wearing away at me and wearing down on me. And personally, I ended up, I suppose, in a sense, at the epicenter of bringing some of this stuff into the light at a deeply personal cost. And in the midst of this time, Jandy was pregnant with Eden, and we were contending with her middle name of hope, this joyful expectation of good, and the season that we were in felt anything but. And I found myself having to walk a really long road of some really painful conversations, a lot of things being said that were just not true, mischaracterizations and a whole host of other things as different people were trying to protect themselves. And there was a particular point in the midst of this time where I'll be honest, I was not a great person to be around. All credit and grace and love to Jandy, but I was not great to be around. The cost of this season and this time, it was immense, and it was painful, and it was deep, and it was daily and ongoing. There was no end in sight, and I know it's vague and hard, but you've got to roll with me on it. And in the midst of this, Jandy comes to me one day, and she just goes, I don't know when this thing's going to end, but I know that I just want the man that I married back. And in the midst of this time, we were praying every day. God, we just want out. God, we just want to move on. Will you just call us out? Will you just lead us into something new? And every time we prayed, we got the same response and the same answer, whether it was a settling in our own hearts, whether it was through different prophetic voices in our lives. You need to stay. You need to stay. You need to stay. And this went on for the best part of almost a year, maybe a little bit longer. And it obviously impacted every area of our lives, and we're seeking God for what's next. I suppose we're in our own moment of going, God, will you just lead us out? Will you just move us on? And at every point, his response is no, stay. Stay, 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 and stick it out. And we obviously didn't have vision for what was next in the midst of this. And we stuck it out and we stayed. And I'll be honest, it probably wasn't even until a little bit earlier this year that some of this stuff was resolved. Years on, different things have still been brought to light in different areas, and things did get better eventually in the midst of all of that. But the reason we stayed, and I don't share this for some holier than thou moment that is supposed to put me in a different position to everybody else in the room. I just know that even in the midst of hard things, even in the midst of what could have been a golden calf moment, to seek our own comfort, to seek out things that would have made life easier, to not have engaged and brought different things into the light, I know that as we moved on from that moment, there would have been no greater dissatisfaction in us than choosing something that God wasn't in. It would have been so much easier to leave in that moment, and I can tell you, I would be standing here today disappointed and living with a deeper dissatisfaction that God told us to stay and we chose to go. Or vice versa. In this moment, God's saying go, and Moses is saying, I'm not going unless you're going. And so I don't know what that looks like for us across the room this morning. There's tough seasons represented, I know. And if we're not in one now, we know that one is going to come. But there's this beautiful posture and moment here that I think Moses models for us, that God, if you're not in it and you're not going to be there, I don't want to be there and I don't want to go. There's a second posture we see in Moses. I think it's a posture of hunger. We've just seen that Moses pleads with God, if your presence doesn't go with us, don't send us. But he doesn't stop there. I think he presses in further. And in this same moment, what comes next, I think, is one of the boldest prayers in all of Scripture, where Moses says to God, now show me your glory. And I want to put to us, I don't think this is Moses being dramatic I don't think this is a throwaway line in the middle of this emotional moment. I think this is the cry of a heart that had seen much but wanted more. Not more from God, but more of God. And this floors me every time I reflect on the life of Moses. We can't forget who was praying this prayer. This is Moses. This is the Moses who stood barefoot before the burning bush and receives the call of God to go and liberate his people. This is the Moses who saw his own staff turn into a serpent. This is the Moses who watched plagues fall like divine judgment on Egypt. This is the Moses who stood at the edge of the Red Sea and watched it part and walked in a step of faith as the people followed. This is the Moses who climbed Mount Sinai and encounters God in fire and thunder. This is Moses who met with God face to face in the tent of meeting as a friend speaks to a friend. This is the Moses. This is the man who had seen the manifest, miraculous, history-shaping power of God firsthand. And still, his cry is, "Show me your glory." What kind of hunger must this take? What kind of heart says, "What I've seen is not enough. I still want more of you, God"? And I think we could write this off as a cry of curiosity, but contextually, it just can't be. I don't think this was even an unhealthy dissatisfaction or Moses demanding things of God. I think this was a holy hunger, and it was a longing that grows not because God is lacking, but because he's limitless. And not because Moses needed it for his own faith, but because I think his faith was so great that he knew more was possible. And if we bring this into the context of the room this morning and the context of our community here, how's our appetite for God? You know, we just moved, like I said, and we got a whole bunch of stuff still in boxes. And if you know anything about our kids, I've shared before, they love to snack. And I think if you look at our pantry boxes and you open them up right now, they're probably like 60-40 snacks versus real food. And I don't know what it is about Banks. I don't want to do the classic like generalization boy versus girl dynamic, but that kid just eats all day. All day. And his appetite is insatiable. This is not the appetite that we're talking about here this morning. This is a spiritual appetite. How is our spiritual appetite for the things of God? Are we content with past encounters? Are we content with secondhand stories and testimonies from other people? Maybe we've grown content with having experienced something of God once. Maybe we've grown content with community and Sunday highlights and gatherings and a great experience of church. Maybe we've grown content with generally feeling close to God. Maybe we've grown content with simply growing in our knowledge, but not our experience. Have we let our appetite for the presence of God shrink? And at this point in the story, at this point of the heart's cry, the posture of Moses, experience tells me that I think at this point, some of us, if we're honest, start to feel a little uncomfortable, maybe even offering the early signs of offense. We're okay with the idea of God's glory when it's conceptual, when it's beautifully poetic, when it's safe inside the context of words on a page in Scripture. We're fine with it when it's something reserved for the pages of Scripture or kids' church craft and great Hollywood movies. The burning bushes, the plagues, the Red Sea moments, they're all great reflections, but Moses is postured in this moment towards God's presence, not as something reserved for history books or sacred events or even sermons. He engaged with God's presence not as a concept to be understood, but as a reality to be pursued and experienced. And maybe, just maybe, the reason that that offends us is because we don't see that kind of boldness and hunger in our own lives. Maybe we're not confronted by Moses' audacity. Maybe we're actually more confronted by our own apathy. And maybe the cry of "Show me your glory" feels foreign, not because it's too much, but because we've settled for too little. And I think when we look at the people around Moses, God's own people, there's signs of the same things in their lives. They weren't falling into failure, I think, in the way that we often imagine or portray them. They're still moving. They're still on the journey. They're still following Moses and his leading to an extent. They're still engaged in worship, albeit to a weird golden calf. And they still carry some level of awareness of God's glory. They've been delivered by God, but they've stopped pursuing more of him. And in that way, I think they don't look so different to us at times, and we don't look so different to them. They haven't walked away entirely. They've just settled. They've settled for what was comfortable. They've settled for what was visible and convenient. They settled for something they could control, and they settled for past moments with God instead of ongoing encounters and his ongoing leadership. And Moses stands in the midst of all of this, and he says, "That's not enough for me, God. I want to see your glory." We've reflected on this often this year already, but I want to put to us again. I think one of the greatest dangers that we face today as followers of Jesus, it's not just drifting into the obvious realities of sin and rebellion, but I think it's quietly drifting into a version of Christianity that keeps us near to church but far from God. It's a kind of discipleship that it's busy, it's polished, it's well managed, it looks great and attractive, but it's ultimately not rooted in the presence and the glory of God. And slowly, almost without perceiving what's happening, our hearts can grow familiar with a faith that ultimately runs on memory and not on hunger. And that our faith ends up being revived or sustained by other people's testimonies and not our own experiences of God. But I think the posture of Moses here, it calls us out of that living, it calls us out of that settling, and it calls us to lift our eyes, to stir our hunger, to cry out again, "God, I want to see your glory." And can I put to us, when Moses prays this prayer, I don't think he's asking for a spiritual high or a spiritual encounter that comes at the next conference and in so many ways what we've done to the presence of God. Moses is asking here to see the fullness of who God is, his character, his holiness, his goodness, and his weightiness. In Hebrew, the word glory literally means weight or substance. It speaks to this idea of something weighty, of something heavy that sits. Can I just be real for a moment? The glory of God is not a vibe. It's not an atmosphere that's curated through lighting and a set list and smoke machines and everything that we've made it. It's not something that can be controlled, strategized, or managed. The glory of God that Moses is crying out for here, it's the deep, soul-shaking reality of God's presence pressing in on our own lives and our own worlds. And here's how God responds. "I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence." The wider context here, God says to Moses, "You can't see all of me and live, but I will let you see my goodness." And I think at this point we have to hold this intention. I think God's saying here that his glory is revealed through his goodness. And this is what Moses hungered for, to see more of who God is, not just more of what God does. And if we pause here and we perhaps reflect honestly for ourselves, what are we truly hungry for right now? Maybe it's the great morning tea at the back. Thank you, Phoebe. What are we craving most deeply in our spiritual lives? Because can I put to us that by today's standards, Moses had it all. He had influence, he had access, he had authority, he had history with God, and yet none of this seems to dull his desire or value for God's presence. Moses never starts to believe his own hype, but he cries out in this moment, "Show me your glory." So what if we didn't settle? What if as individual followers of Jesus and as the community of God here, what if we believe there was more than we've known? What if we believe there was more than we've tasted? And what if we dared to ask for more? Not because we want to chase hype, not because our desire is to make more noise and contribute more confusion to the world, not because we want to run more events or seek more experiences, but because we simply want more of God, more of his nearness, more of his presence, and more of his glory in our lives and in our gatherings. What would a community in Toowoomba look like if it walked this ancient path and prioritized this timeless truth? What would it look like if we were marked not just by good music and healthy programs and growing numbers, but by a deep and unshakable value for God's presence? What would our community look like here if our greatest desire and highest priority was simply that God would be with us? That we wouldn't move without him, that we wouldn't settle for anything less than his leading, and that we wouldn't trade our comfort or convenience or control for the kind of hunger that Moses had. What would outlook look like if our hunger matured to the point where we regularly, humbly, and boldly prayed, God, show us your glory? I tell you what, that is the kind of church and kind of community that I want my kids growing up in. That's the kind of community that doesn't just play it safe and go through the motions. That's the kind of people who carry the weightiness of God's presence into a world that is starving for something real and something deep. And this is what Moses longed for. And I think the invitation to walk that ancient path and prioritize that timeless truth is still before us this morning. Worship team, you guys can jump back up. Thank you for this morning. You know, if we reflect more broadly on Moses' life, which we don't have the time for this morning, he was not a perfect leader. He was not a perfect person. God finds him in the middle of a desert after he murdered somebody and runs away. While he wasn't perfect, he was deeply dependent. And while he wasn't perfect, he wasn't complacent in how he approached God. Ellie's going to reflect a little bit more on this, but Moses doesn't lead by gifting. He leads from a place of intimacy and from abiding. He didn't settle for what God had done, but instead he leaned in for more of who God is. And I think through his life, I would like to think that we're reminded that one of the most defining marks of God's people has never been success or popularity or influence or even growth. It's always been his presence. And reality is there's a lot that we can do in our own strength. We can plan, we can organize, we can strategize, we can manage the moving parts of regular Sunday gatherings and events, and we can do all these things until Jesus comes back. But if we don't have him at the center of all of it, what are we actually doing? If his presence doesn't go with us, we don't want to go. So can I put to us as a community this morning, as individual followers of Jesus, that the call for us as we reflect on Moses' life is to be a people who don't rush ahead of God, but to be a people who don't settle for secondhand spirituality, but instead to be a people who carry the same posture and heart's cry of Moses, one of dependence that says, unless you go, we won't go. To carry a posture of hunger that says, God, show us your glory. And as we close, can I be honest? Speaking more so in the context of our community here, I'm really not all that interested in a version of Outlook Christian Church where the most significant thing about us is found in growth or gatherings or goals. What if the most defining trait of us as a people and as a community was that we were deeply dependent on the presence of God and deeply hungry for more of the things of God? Where we don't just do church, but where we actually host God and experience his glory. And we can't program that. We can't strategize that. But we can prioritize it. And it is a posture that we can choose. And it's a posture that we can lean into and remind ourselves of time and time and time again. Will we gather? Absolutely. Will we grow? That's up to God. Will we have goals and bring some strategy into the mix of it? For sure, we want to be good stewards. But I want to put to us again that in the posture, the heart cry of Moses here, we will never graduate from our need for the presence of God. And that looks like something, an expression of worship. It looks like something in how we pray. It looks like something in how we gather with one another. And we're going to keep going on that journey. But the Outlook Christian Church that I'm interested in, and I'd like to think the Outlook Christian Church that God is interested in, is one that is deeply dependent on Him and continues to seek and prioritize His presence, seeking His face, and that we never graduate from the prayer of God, show us your glory. Would you pray with me as we close? God, perhaps the simplest prayer this morning is just that. Show us your glory. Show us your glory and keep us dependent on you. Continue to lead us and guide us and shape us and form us. God, would you do all that you need to do in our lives and our community here to posture us in an ongoing posture of dependence and an ongoing posture of hunger where we seek you wholeheartedly, that our appetite for you is never satisfied. While there is a hurting and broken world that is craving for something of your glory and of your goodness, God, would you use us to reveal it? Lead us forward, we pray. Show us your glory. Show us your glory. Amen.